Welcome back, listeners. As the post-PAX East hype continues, I love these shows. It's like all the fun people we met at PAX East are coming on the show to talk about their game in great detail, and we can ask them a bunch of dumb shit along the way. Joining us this week is Nick Wozniak, the pixel artmancer for a little studio called Yacht Club Games. You may have heard of them. Developer of Mina the Hollower, a pixel-perfect 2D action-adventure game where you burrow beneath hazards, whip foes into oblivion, and gear up with an arsenal of sidearms and trinkets. And thank you for that description that I tore from your Steam page. Waz, how's it going, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing great. Why? Listen, yes. before we get into the whole, like, who are you, what do you do situation, sure. Do you recall how poorly I performed at this game at PAX East? Is it burned in
your
memory?
You did great. I honestly, it was fine. this game is a little bit harder than, in certain ways than, especially as Zelda. There's a big emphasis on combat, and there's a big emphasis on positioning your character, and you know, what we showed off is not necessarily the first level. We're kind of throwing you in the middle of it. And so, yeah, I think you performed adequately.
I think you're being way too nice. Rarely does a game encounter make me question, should I be doing games at all as a hobby? And I think a lot of it is...
As long as you can talk about games, you're probably okay.
Yeah, sure. Sure, I can barely talk as it is, let alone talk about games. But yeah, I think a lot of it is you're looking at a game that looks a lot like Link's Awakening, and my hands are trying to do a very specific kind of gameplay. And to ask me to unlearn that is a little tricky, but I love the fact that it's kind of subversive in that way where, hey, it may look like this thing, but it doesn't play at all like the thing that you think it plays like.
Yeah, I think Mina's good at presenting clear level layout and clear interactions and having you have a good understanding of like what the level's about to like give to you. But it also hides a level of complexity in the combat and like how you build your character. We showed off at the most recent demo that you played. We showed off some of the different weapons you can play as, and those weapons really change, you know, what the character is. It's sort of like Monster Hunter or Bloodborne, where the weapon is the build that you're taking and the mobility completely changes depending on what you're using. Yeah, so that's definitely like built-in player knowledge that needs to happen in order for you to get there. It's definitely not as complicated as, definitely not as complicated as Monster Hunter, that's for sure. or probably even as Bloodborne, but you know, you can approach it in a different fun way, and hopefully that's like where a lot of the excitement comes from.
Yeah, I think the moment you mentioned Bloodborne to me, it was just a bunch of white noise, and then it was like, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." And I was like, "This game plays
dramatic.
Like, what did you say? Am I in the right booth?"
Yeah. No, I mean, Bloodborne has a lot of baggage with it, that's for sure. But what's cool is that like each weapon does represent a new set of abilities you're going to be learning. Like, you play the game completely different if you're using the whip versus once you get the buzzsaw thing, or if you're using the hammer. Like, this is like those games just completely change depending on what weapon you're using. And yeah, we wanted to kind of capture that a little bit, where there's a kind of a middle of the road whip, there's a quick fast daggers, there's a super heavy hammer, and we have two more we're still working on that are eventually going to make it out there.
I love how they feel like a character class. The weapons play so differently. Like, if you want something more fast and loose, the dagger is like your thing, the hammer is like your heavy hitter, slow brute force, and it's like playing an entirely different kind of character, which is like incredible to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's like where a lot of the satisfaction from to us comes from, Monster Hunter, Bloodborne, those kind of games. That's also like where I feel like Zelda can improve a lot, is that the weapon interaction, and then that's why they had such a huge emphasis on different kinds of weapons in Breath of the Wild. But I think like they could go a step farther. And in the context of really dense gameplay, rich set of rooms that you see in Link's Awakening, adding fun combat on top of that is, I think, a winning combination. So, yeah, like looking for ways to improve the formula a bit is kind of what we're aiming at.
So let's burrow, so to speak, under the surface.
hollow into it.
I hate myself in so many ways. what is Mina? What is a hollower? What is this world that you guys have crafted?
Sure, yeah. So Mina is she's a scientist and an adventurer, an inventor. She is, now we're still working on the lore, so if I mess something up, please don't hold it against me. But she's called to the island of the Tenebrous Isles, and she is called there by a prominent figure there called the Baron, and he's having trouble with these giant things called spark generators that are all across the island, and she's going there with the task to like fix them. And along the way, she kind of finds herself wrapped up into what's going on and the struggles that are of the people there. And so it's also just a way for us to tell a gothic fairy tale and get players in a kind of different mindset than Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight was very whimsical and everything was happy and cute. And there's still some cuteness because we can't really ever shed that skin, but we're hoping to find more tragic tales. You might run into things that make you a little uncomfortable. It may be that the story ends with you feeling good about the narrative, but ultimately your role in the thing as a whole is kind of messed up. So yeah, it's like a gothic approach to storytelling.
Yeah, I love how you're hiding that on this veneer of pixel art 2D goodness. Like, it looks cute. You're a mouse doing a Simon Belmont impression. That's what you think it's going to be. It's all fun and games, but it's going to destroy your soul. But it's
it will not be as depressing as Bloodborne. It won't. Don't worry.
Bloodborne was depressing? Nah, what are you talking about?
Oh, come on. yeah. Sunshine and roses.
I didn't have like a crisis of my existence when I finished playing that game.
God, yeah.
Just want to glue some more eyes to my forehead.
yeah, or inside your brain.
where did this concept come from? Because, you know, you guys are the Shovel Knight developer, mm-hmm. and how do you go from that as like your mascot to something wholly different? And it's still having an impact. People are responding to it really well. It's not just your
own we've pony. Seen it too,
it's like you're legit.
Yeah, it's the reception's been really good. Yeah, and as far as like where it came from, I think, most of the tone and the ideas kind of started from a demo that the director of the game put together. His name is Alec Faulkner, mm-hmm. and he like put this kind of quick demo together that had that character. It was a mouse, but her nose was actually really big. that demo, like it at first blush it feels the same, but since then we've kind of taken it and then we all like the idea a lot. We like the idea of a Castlevania exploring Zelda, those kinds of things, and like what can we do to like improve on those types of games and bring our own voice to the table. But yeah, so the team has taken it well beyond that demo. I'd say it's like it's sort of grown into its own thing, where I think in my brain and my think about that demo, it like played the same, but I'm sure if I load it up right now, I'd play it and it'd be like a totally different experience. it's really evolved. So yeah, it sort of started from Alex wanting to do like a Castlevania / combat-y game, and now it's kind of like still relied on those pillars to start with, but kind of mm-hmm. evolved into its own thing.
Was it always in that top-down perspective in the initial concept? Okay.
Definitely, yes. Yeah. Top down, looking like Link's Awakening. We looked at different games and how they did this, the how they do their overworld level art versus like their inside a cave, and like one looks like it's like cakes on top of ground, and the other is like looks like it's like being cut out of the flat ground that you're looking into. And so there's just like lots of different things and research to like find out, you know, what games did well and like how certain games like that, you know, solved the same kind of problems that we're facing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a game on, I forget what it's called, it's on Neo Geo Pocket. It's like a monster hunting game, you have a gun and stuff, and it was really interesting. We played it and like loved the various weapons you can get, and like the feel was like really interesting and unique. And I'll have to get the name of that game for you. It's like really, it's really cool though. But yeah, we played a lot of games just like kind of inspire ourselves, and yeah, more broad than you would think.
Right. And then you guys put this thing on Kickstarter and it just crushed everything.
Yeah. I think that was partly just because people could trust us.
Right.
We, you know, with the Shovel Knight Kickstarter, we matched all the promises we made and exceeded them, and wasn't the best like business decision necessarily, but it was the most like creative, fulfilling, and like what we felt like we owed to the fans and to the supporters. So yeah, I don't know, that's sort of like where we came from, and I think that's like one of the big reasons why Mia did so well at Kickstarter.
Do you kind of assume at least a little bit, like when you put this thing out there, like how many stretch goals are we going to smash? Because you know you're going to hit the funding. I feel like with that with that level of trust, it's kind of a guaranteed. I mean, nothing is definite in this world, but still, I feel
right,
like
yeah.
No, taxes, I think we had Yacht Club games getting funded on Kickstarter.
we definitely were more careful with the stretch goals this time, and so we didn't set ourselves up to fail or set ourselves up for a ton of extra work. You know, our stretch goals were things that we're hoping to integrate, and like there were ways for us to like guarantee that those things could happen. But just because we didn't hit all of our stretch goals, but that doesn't necessarily mean we won't do those things. You know, it was just sort of a way for us to guarantee that we wouldn't cut those things. A lot of times you have conversations where it's like, well, we need to like cut some time with like, this is going too long, but we can't cut this because we promised it in this Kickstarter update or whatever. And so the stretch goals were sort of like used to like lock those things in. And yeah, it's, I think there's lots of really cool content that we're making for the game, and I hope people are satisfied with where it's at. And when it finally releases, but yeah, as far as like, just like overpromising, we definitely were scared of that. Coming out of Shovel Knight.
This is a moment where if I had the money, I'd be like, I'd cut you a check right now for whatever you're missing to fulfill those stretch goals. what did you guys learn in going into this campaign from your first Kickstarter with Shovel Knight? What were some of the things that you did a little differently? You said like you scaled things back a little bit. What are some other things that you were looking at closely when you put Mina on Kickstarter?
Yeah, we also we scaled things back a little bit in terms of like what we were promising. Mm-hmm. We made sure that our rewards weren't very physical until much later, and had to, you know, try to keep things digital rewards and keep those like fun and interesting, and also not too many. It was hard to kind of like figure out ways to like find value in certain things, and so like we rearranged the goals a lot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think like the big things were just like taking the places where like we had spent a lot of time in the original Shovel Knight. Like in the original Shovel Knight, we had these directors for a day, and so for $1,000 backers, they could come in and tell us what they wanted to put in, and it was a boss or an enemy. It turns out to be four bosses and one enemy.
Oh wow!
And like, we just like did whatever. Like we worked with them to create whatever they wanted. And that was great. We took those characters and ran with them. We integrated them into the story. The main antagonist of or a character that becomes the main antagonist of the Spectre of Torment started as one of those characters. We just kind of like ran with
that. That's so neat.
So yeah, we wanted to kind of do that again and like kind of have outside energy coming in, but we knew how much effort those took, and it wasn't $1,000. It was like way more. And so
pixel art's expensive.
Well, yeah, and pixel art is like not the most expensive part of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, like you know, saying those prices different just to, I mean, and like they was immediately sold out, so it's like we didn't even hit that, you know. But yeah, just like learning from our experience and like what actually took time and what we thought would take time, and like making sure that when we promised things in Mina that we didn't overpromise.
That's such like old school, like when those Mega Man like design a boss concept contest they had back in the day in Japan, like submit like a bunch of stuff and they would just pick their favorites and just put them in the game. That's
awesome. That's definitely what we're thinking about when we're thinking about this, and also like when we did our original art contest, you know, we pitched that, we like showed images of those and stuff. So yeah, that's always like always on my mind. I can't believe that's real, but it's so cool.
Man, I would have given $1,000 to pitch some goofy ass boss with a cock and balls on his forehead. Like, this is what I want.
Well, it definitely would not have gotten approved.
Listen, I would say there's this enemy in Persona or the Shin Megami franchise that you should look to for some inspiration. It's a chariot dick. Exactly. Make it work.
Wow. Well, we could figure out a way to make it cute and not rated M, I'm sure. And everybody else might think it's you know, the long bus or whatever, but you know that it's like the penis bus.
Oh, this is happening. So Waz, where the role of a pixel art mancer, where do you fit into the cog of the machine that is Yacht Club Games? What are your responsibilities like on a day-to-day basis?
So I put Artmancer there because I do many different kinds of art, and I'm not specifically doing pixel art every day-to-day for Mina. That's actually being done by Sandy Gordon.
Oh, that guy online. He's such a cool guy.
Oh yeah, he's the best. I love Sandy's that awesome. Guy. Yeah, and he's such a hugely positive person.
Very
great to work with.
Too he's much for good. Me. He's bring it down a little
he's
bit.
Too much. No, he's great. I'll sing Sandy's praises all day.
No, he's on Twitter. He goes by being.
On Twitter. He goes by Bandygrass, so you can follow him.
Yeah, huh.
little plug for Sandy.
So rad.
But he's doing all the art. I have come in and done stuff like I did some advising on palette stuff. The opening trailer, it's like an opening cinematic for the game. I directed that and relit that and stuff, and so I've come in to do, I want to do more. I want to get in there and like do a boss or something. But yeah, right now I'm working actually on a project that is not announced and I can't talk about, but
oh my god,
it is very exciting and is 3D, and so I'm
struggling with that. Is it a Yacht Club Games game or something?
No, yeah.
Oh my god, you guys are breaking
two projects
into the 3D realm. That's nuts.
I know, it is nuts, and it's a lot of the headache, but it's going well lately. Especially, it's been going really well, and I was just working on some posing for characters right before this.
Hey, you're seeing that Hyper Light Drifter sequel, being like, we could fuck with this. These polygons and shit.
I mean, we've been working on this for a while. Before Solar Ash was even out, I think we had some things going for it. But with Hyper Light Breaker, and with like a bunch of other games that are being announced that are like really fun and interesting. You know, we want to like dip our toes in the water.
It's so weird as like a grown ass man boy gamer. Like, you know, when I was a young boy first playing games, like into the 8 and 16 bit era, and then we crossed over into polygons and like 3D models, it was such a huge thing. And you know, we've gone so far with that since, you know, the early 2000s. But now seeing indie studios who have, they were like just pixel art, and then they're now evolving into a 3D game. It's that same energy. And it's like that same sort of awe. Like, look at them. They're like, they're growing up and embracing new tech and doing fun things. This is so cool.
It's cool what indie studios can do these days with 3D. And like, it's not just, I'm glad that like more 3D games are being made. And I like, you know, seeing indie devs like kind of take on huge challenges. Because the thing is, like, 3D art is like really, it's way more intensive. You need a huge team. You need much more technical solutions. You need more tools. You need more just people all around. And yeah, seeing developers like kind of graduate into that is interesting. It's cool seeing less people do it, and like seeing the also like the more cheap approaches, not cheap, more lean approaches to 3D.
Good word. Know,
and more effective, where it's not just it's like it's cutting corners for the sake of like making it a good game.
Scrappy.
And yeah, scrappy. Yeah. I like that attitude. So it's good.
How do you find between, because you've worked in 2D now, 3D, how do you find the two art styles? Is there like, do they have their own different challenges? Do some things translate over for you as an artist? What's that like?
Yeah, they definitely have their own challenges, and there's some trade over. I think 2D is a billion times easier. And yeah, because it's just like everything in 3D, you can't just have like you know, in a pixel animation, you have a character like Mina. She's like burrowing in the ground, and when she does, dirt pops out, and then she becomes like a little rock thing. If that were 3D, that'd be like three different rigs, and that would have like a VFX pass, and they would have like, oh, we don't have, you know, whatever thresholding in the VFX part of the engine yet. We got to wait till that comes online, and it's like, this would take me like a minute, like literally maybe even a minute in pixel art. But in 3D, it's got to be like all these things. But yeah, I mean, that's just how it is.
Because you know, I don't want to push you too much, because I don't want to have you say things like, here's the game we're working on. So let's circle back to our little friend Mina.
Sure.
Let's go to the gameplay a little bit. We touched on the different sort of styles and the weapons and all of that. Let's talk about the whole like gameplay loop, because I recall from the demo, it involved finding a key to unlock a door to go to a different area.
Right.
Give us a run through of all that.
Yeah, sure. So it's very similar to a Link's Awakening. You're going to find keys. Our keys are gears. They're like gear keys. it uses the back where the gear is. We're very clever. You find gears and you unlock doors that are in the way.
Listen, I'm a huge fan of Portmandu, so you combine the words. I do it all the time. All of my friends and family despise it. You should be taken the back and shot in the face. Stop it. But go on.
So it's exploration. It's not like the levels are a little bit more sprawling, but somewhat linear. It's not as open-ended as they, I think, as Zelda, where you can kind of get lost pretty easily. Would kind of like want to direct the player through an area. That said, there's lots of side areas, there's lots of side rooms. You know, we had the demo at PAX, and if you like know where you're going and you go right to the end, it can be, I think our internal record is like under 7 minutes. But everybody who like explored it and found all the rooms, that, you know, anybody who is in the press, because we have a timer for the normies, for everybody else, anybody who was in the press, who was able to like book an appointment with us, they spent the entire hour playing. And that was like, that was standard, you know. There's so much density of there. There's so much like things to find and like little hidden areas and like you know trinkets and stuff. And so that's just to illustrate, like there's lots of exploration happening, and like directed path through the levels. Along the way, you're going to pick up trinkets, and trinkets are things that kind of augment your abilities or change how things go. So they can do things like change how long you're burrowing for. Mm-hmm. They can increase your jump distance, maybe. There's one that it when you walk over a pit, it for the first couple tiles, it puts a web down that you can walk on. Like, you can like walk over a pit.
Oh, that's so neat.
Which obviates a lot of level design stuff, which is fun.
Right.
There's one that if you equip it when you come out of the burrow, there's an explosion. And so instead of the burrow being just like a dodge mechanic, you can use it aggressively.
Oh, yes. I like this.
It's really good. That one's really good. There's one that gives you an air dash. And then the others like just increase your health or increase your defense or increase your power. So there's a combination of like modifiers on what the character's doing. It's very similar to if you've played Hollow Knight. They have the I forget what they're called in Hollow Knight, like trinkets or badges. Mm-hmm. So we'll have slots and each one will take up a slot. She can also pick up sidearms, and sidearms are what we're calling sort of the Castlevania secondary item, like the axe or the holy water or the cross, like things that use up a resource to be used. And so those can be very powerful. Or very fun and interesting. And kind of one of the things we're trying to do with those is find ways to make those interactions more than just a projectile. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, the sidearm that's the gyro dagger, it's like a dagger that you throw it, it spins at the apex of its throw, and then comes back towards where it came from. But on its way back, if you hit it, it'll go back out again. And so you can kind of like bounce it back and forth a little bit, and then eventually it stops. But by doing so, it's like it's a much more interactable weapon. It's not just a one and done kind of thing. And the same with the axe. You can throw the axe. I think you can actually toss, like if you're fast enough, you can bounce the axe back. At this moment, that doesn't really do anything. But maybe in the future, when you hit it, it'll create a explosion or something, and it'll be advantageous to kind of like juggle things. And so, yeah, every time we have a new sidearm, we're trying to figure out ways to make them interesting and relevant to combat. One of my favorite ones is a teleporting puddle. She like throws it on the ground, and then she can go and do whatever. And then you hit a button again, and she goes back to where you dropped it and explodes. And so like it's a way to like kind of put yourself, give yourself a safe position, mm-hmm. do something a little bit risky, and then come back and explode, or like use the explosion as a way to like hit the boss when they're jumping around.
Yeah.
So it's fun to like think of these sidearms and these trinkets and stuff and make them as interactable and gameplay relevant as possible.
Yeah, that dagger one I think was one of my favorite ones from the demo, because I was trying to master the whole like making it into a boomerang in a sense, is what you're trying to do with it. Like, I could shred through whole bosses with this goddamn thing right now if I really wanted to.
That's what it's good at, actually. We had to nerf it because you could still, like, it used to get a little bit harder to bounce it, but you used to be able to do it pretty consistently, and it would just cook through all the bosses. So we made it so that after a couple bounces, it breaks, but you can just throw another one. So
when you guys are designing like the core weapons and these sidearms, did any not make the final game, or things that were just too overpowered or underwhelming that you thought it's not going to work in some way, or do you retool them? How does that all work?
Usually it's just a retooling thing. It's mm-hmm. we come up with an idea for sidearms. They're much more varied because mm-hmm. they're just like we have lots of different ideas, and so those are it's like, let's do a throwing dagger, and then we like kind of work with it a little bit. It's like it's kind of boring, so we'll add this wrinkle to it. Or it's like, it's like it's too much, and so we make it break. We try not to do is have a bunch of stuff that we just cut outright, because we feel like that's like a lot of wasted effort. Mm. And usually it's worth it to just like tweak it 10% and make it worth it. You can do a lot by just like reducing or by increasing the cost of something if it's too powerful. Mm-hmm. Because you want to have the player be able to do powerful things and have moments of really big impact. It's not a two-player game where you're competing against each other. Mm-hmm. It's okay if like you make a choice that kind of breaks it a little bit. It's okay if like, because like imbalance is fun. It's fun to kind of like have sanctioned cheating. It's okay if like the web
It's part of the game.
Makes it so you can just like skip part of the level. That's like, that's great. You know, the player like feels clever. Yes, we put it there for a reason. Exactly. And so like, you know, having a game that's like too balanced can feel very homogenous and kind of just like pushing through and gray. But having like moments where like big, exciting events happen, that's like how you tell gameplay stories and how you like talk about it with your friends. And so, yeah, that kind of stuff, like finding ways to like sanctionally cheat is fun.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you can always use whatever tools you give the player to get through your initial run through, but after that, there's always right. like self-imposed limits, like, okay, I'm going to do right. like a so-and-so only run of this game, not use any of the sidearms, and see how that goes. And that's why right, yeah, I like having like that level of choice, because you can be more creative with how you play the game once you master it, which is great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's lots of choice there. And so, yeah, having challenge runs is fun. I watch a lot of Elden Ring challenge runs, and those are long, and they're fun, and it's exciting. It's like, wow, that he just like beat the whole game only with thrown items or only with counterattacks and stuff like that's like
only really with summons. I've seen one do, but that was crazy. He would just sit there and just summon, and not it was like a damageless so run kind
yeah,
of a thing.
Yeah, but you gotta heal. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a lot of those are fun. And I don't know if we'll be able to find some of those, and I don't know if like the systems can support that in Mina, but like giving self-imposed challenges is always great. Like the basic one, like you know, whip only, no sub weapons, no trinkets. That's like. That's sort of like the Buster only, right? Mega Man runs where you just.
I was
Buster,
just gonna
no
say
run, like
that is the only thing I do in terms of a self-imposed challenge when I play a game, because my brother and I have played through all those games 1,001 right. times, and yeah. it's always like, how do we make it harder? Okay, it's it's like no damage, Buster run, no tanks, all of it. Just yeah. that's just how we do it.
That's very hard yeah. in some of those games. So yeah.
Because we're insane and we play them like we're paid to do so. when you're, again, were any ideas like for these weapons, like did someone propose yeah. and you were like, that's insane. We can't have.
Some of the weirder ones for like the weapons, like those, like the class builds, basically. Mm-hmm. We've had like a lot of very high level ideas. Mm-hmm. But nothing like really, nothing really like iterated on that would like be cut. Like, there's not. I don't think there's ever gonna be a like cutting room floor weapon mm-hmm. showcase, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's like concepts drawn for things that are silly and might make the cut. I know there's like there was a sniper rifle that's also a bow staff or something. I forget. I don't know if that's going to be in the game. That might, but
that seems so out there that it has to be in the game. Because like that, like seeing Mina hold like a sniper rifle, it's like whip,
yeah,
giant hammer, or freaking sniper rifle.
It's hard to think of like, because like we had the fast thing, we have the normal whip, we have the heavy hammer, but now we need like, okay, what's the weird thing, like. Like maybe there's a weapon that's more rhythm based, and so you're like doing more projectiles and mixing that with the melee thing. So that could be like it's about the rhythm. And then the fifth one is like, well, it's just gonna be the weirdo thing. Like mm-hmm. like what's the weirdest way to put damage out there? Is it just like a yo-yo that you're controlling, like Ninja Gaiden, the yo-yo?
Oh,
Ninja Star.
I thought yo-yo
dodging
from
it.
Star Tropics. You said yo-yo.
Yo-yo from Star Tropics.
But that's kind of like a whip in a sense, but sure, not as impactful or deadly. But like, you could save a like weird could be a fun unlockable, like something that's so out there and so zany.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
but it's after you've done with the traditional normie yeah. weapons.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully like you find ways to play with these weapons and just like you do a full weirdo yo-yo run. So yeah, we're trying to figure out ways to thread those in, because like we want the players to like be able to play with those as often as possible, but also like those are good rewards for, you know, doing big giant things and big milestones in the game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're still like figuring all that out.
I think Oyoyo has to happen now. We've mentioned it. We've touched upon it. We both seem to like it a lot. It's been focus group tested. You can take it
well,
back.
Well, if it does happen, then you'll know that it's because of this conversation and not because I'm pulling ideas that we've talked about.
You can already be like, oh, some guy paid me $1,000 to put a yo-yo in the game. What's been one of the silliest stories to come out of development for this game? Like, you know, during the day-to-day, give me like a fun little anecdote when you're putting Mina together.
See, a lot of it has to do with how we're letting ourselves take inspiration from weird things. We're trying to we're trying to like design monsters that are like creepy and like kind of unnerving, and so just like finding the random things on the internet that like shouldn't be but are. You know, there's like that, there's a couple pictures, there's the picture of like a bird that is holding all of its young under its wings, and they're all walking, but you can't see the bodies of the young, so it just looks like a bird with like 500 legs, and like that was like thrown around as like, oh, hey, we should make this into a monster. It's like there's a weird creepy centipede bird, and there's like another one where it was a dog that was like pulled into a panoramic view camera thing, and like so it looks like the dog is like also walking with it, and so that it's literally a dog with like 100 legs, again 100 legs. I don't know why, but
it's a dog impede, actually, obviously.
Making an enemy out of that. So, yes, a dog impede. I don't know. It's like taking inspiration from like the weirdest things, or like looking at like old, you know, gothic depictions of monsters or scary things, and like the silly like fears people had, and like maybe we could like, you know, make a whole thing about this, a whole quest about like, you know, whatever.
Google night terrors and see what comes up in the
exactly. night terrors from the 1800s.
Listen, if you want a pro tip, I do follow this Instagram page. I think it's called Art of Death and Vintage Sci-Fi Art. It's just a lot of old shit that looks creepy as fuck.
Okay, cool.
That will both serve to fuel your nightmares and your creativity.
I'm looking forward to it.
And anything that Junji Ito puts out there, that man is just
a terror.
God, what is happening in that man's brain? So when can we expect to play this charming, soulful little game of yours?
I wish I could tell you an exact number or an exact date, but I actually don't know. We are working on it, and development's like going well, like I said. But it's like way too far out. We had a date of December 2023, and that was because that was the latest that Kickstarter would let us put the delivery. That was always just like a, like, you know, placeholder basically. When we do have an idea, we will definitely make a big campaign about it and talk about it. But yeah, I can't even tell.
Well, you know what though, was we all trust you. It's the best part.
Oh, good.
You can take as long as you need. Not that long, but long enough.
Yeah, no. I mean, no, we appreciate that. And like, I think that like that is very reassuring. I think I like that the narrative that's popular is that, you know, take your time, work on it till it's good. And I like that works, because like that's what we need to do. So that's good.
Listen, I just feel very reassured that there's still a very healthy appetite for games that look and play like this.
Me too. I'm surprised.
It's more than just the art form. It's the gameplay. It's a state of mind. It's this retro vibe, and I never want it to go away, because I don't feel old yet when I see games that look like this. Like, okay, I'm still a child. they're still making Game Boy games. I'm not that old.
Yeah, it's when they start making PS2 throwback games, then that's when you start to feel old, right?
Fuck.
Anyway, PS1 Bloodborne was pretty cool.
Yeah, we had a
and not an existential nightmare.
We had an indie horror game dev that he did PS1 style games for the longest time, and now he's doing PS2. I'm like, oh god, it's just
It's happening.
Now we're getting there now. It's like, oh, PS2 is like shit, 20 years old.
Yep.
Can't, my heart can't bear it. Well, Waz, it's time to get into some rapid fire questions. Okay. And they're sometimes not very rapid. I feel like we ask some deep shit sometimes. Like, that shouldn't be a question asked in rapid fire, but fuck it, who cares? Let's start out with this one. And I want to know if you have thought about this, because, you know, you deal with a lot of retro stuff and a lot of classic inspirations. A lot of indie devs, I feel, lately are being able to work on a lot of classic, high stakes, high profile IP. You have Bloopers doing Silent Hill remake. There's a whole section of indie developers doing Silent Hill games. Castlevania with Dead Cells, Crypt the NecroDancer with Legend of Zelda. If you were given the chance to work on a beloved IP that you could put your own Yacht Club game spin on, what IP would that be? What franchise?
Oh.
What comes to mind?
Probably either Mega Man or Metroid. I think Mega Man could do with a classic vision again, and
I would die.
I think Metroid also could use with a refresh. I know people like the classic or the recent ones, but I'm more fond of Metroid.
And I'm just glad that we got another Metroid 2D, because I love Dread, but I loved Fusion. But you guys doing a Mega Man game, like, I think I just punctured a hole in my desk. Is how excited I am right now. Because the thought of how good you guys are at pixel art, and then the gameplay, then you understand what it takes to make a good Mega Man game. I'm gonna clip this, send it over to Capcom. Listen, guys,
go for it. Yeah, I think there's probably some better pixel artists out there. I think that, like, what we'd be able to bring to the table would be like more, I think more fun level design and mm-hmm. like more approach to like gameplay objects and gameplay interaction that like Mega Man 11 was okay, but I think like there's some things that I think we could like improve on and kind of remind people why they're fun, why it's fun mm-hmm. to have just like really like simple interactions.
Yeah, it was very very safe, very very by the numbers, like, you know, the whole like dual gear mechanic thing, power and speed. Okay, it's neat. Yeah, you know,
that was weird. I never knew what I was supposed to do. You know, like, am I supposed to do this without using the slowdown? Am I supposed to use this power up?
I always forgot it was there.
Anything. Yeah. Yeah, I think
it's because you're hardwired to not think about, right. I can slow down time. That's odd.
And also, like, the challenges were never, like, so strict that you had to. Mm-hmm. It was never, like, a binary choice. Like, it was like, oh, I could do this, you know, just by playing Mega Man. And then you realize, oh, I think they like wanted me to use the slowdown gear, but like you're already three screens away. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that there's some faltering there.
When you think of a good joke, like 20 minutes later,
yeah,
with that staircase humor, it's like, ah, fuck, I should have done that. Let's say one of your colleagues gets a phone call mm-hmm. and they're saying Waz has been arrested. He's in jail. What have you done? Why are you in jail?
Oh, what have I done for jail?
Done,
are you asking me like what illegal things I do now that I don't tell anybody about? Is that what you're asking?
Fair.
Okay. I guess I'd be in jail for probably something stupid that I didn't realize was illegal. Like, you know, one of those weird archaic laws where you're not allowed to like cross the state borders while
wearing a blue shirt on Thursdays.
While wearing a blue shirt. Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I'm pretty straight laced. I'm willing to admit on the podcast.
That's totally fine. I think we can evolve this question though. Let's shout out to our boy Sandy. You get a call that Sandy's been arrested. What did Sandy do?
Got arrested for juicing up for a working out competition. You know that guy's a bodybuilder?
Yeah.
He's like secretly so buff. Yeah. I like talking about this because it makes him uncomfortable. Sorry, Sandy. Love you.
Now I know the secret.
Yeah. So he'd be like cheating to win a bodybuilding contest.
It's gonna,
if they arrest you for that.
DM him for shirtless pics. Can I see how ripped you are, Sandy?
Uh-huh. Clever. That's very subtle.
If past lives were a real thing, they might be a real thing. We don't know. What do you think your past life was?
My past life? I don't feel very punished, so I was probably very boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or I was like a frog, you know, just kind of there.
Yeah.
My own thing.
You paid your dues. You lived your short life. Yeah. Now you make dope ass games for a living.
Murder anyone.
No.
No.
Is that what you did now? That's why you wouldn't answer the question before about going to jail?
Well, I mean. What?
What do you think you'd have better chances of winning? A rap battle or a dance off with someone?
I guess a rap battle. No.
I want to ask you to rap and or dance.
I was going to say a dance off because my brain can't work good. Mm-hmm. And I just explained that by answering complete opposite of what I meant. So, yeah, no rap battle. Definitely a dance off. Dance off.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I took swing dancing in high school.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, our prom was man. Like a swing dancing prom. It was weird.
I took like Mamba classes for a month, and biggest waste of my time and money because none of it retained. It's like, who was I trying to date that convinced me to go into this thing?
That's definitely the reason you were there.
Do you see yourself more as a cult leader or a cult member?
Oh. Maybe a cult member who's secretly in charge.
Ooh.
Because I don't want to be the creepy weirdo.
You're like undercover boss, but you're like...
Yeah, but I'll take the, yeah. I'll be the vice president that's secretly running things.
Would you rather have shoes that were made entirely of Lego or clothes that were made of kiwi? The prickly fruit, not the bird.
Like the kiwi skin?
Yeah, or not people from New Zealand.
Or the birds.
Birds.
I think so. My kids love Legos,
mm-hmm.
and they're everywhere.
And
I think my feet are callous. I'm a Lego walker. I can tread the brick path, and I think that they would be like fine. if you knew how to like build them, you can make great Lego shoes.
You know, like the feeling you get when like someone says something. Like, and you get like porcelain teeth, like, oh, you're chewing sand. You feel like the sensation of it. The sensation of stepping on a Lego. I feel it. Cause like we've all done it before. It's like my foot is like triggered by you saying, this Lego's everywhere.
You gotta roll it. It's the problem is the Lego corners. Legos have the corners, and those are the things that hurt you. But if you kind of, as you step, you kind of like move your foot a little bit and let me get flat. Mm. You're good. It's easy.
Easy.
I'll teach you.
Yeah.
I'll show you my Lego calluses.
It's like, listen, I can't show you pics of Sandy shirtless, but here's my callousy feet. Will that do?
Yeah.
That's a good trade. What is a first world problem you have?
My desk mat on my desk is like millimeters too long,
mm-hmm.
and it drives me nuts because it like goes a little bit past the desk, or if I pull it the other way, it like it comes into my like finger area,
mm-hmm.
and it's like just not the right size.
Yeah.
And so to solve this, I need to buy a like fully custom desk mat that covers my whole desk, and I don't have to worry about it, and there's one company that does it. What's gonna cost like $350, but I'm seriously considering it. Okay. Anyway, I mean,
it's a visual thing. It's like something is not right. Something is off. No,
it's tactile. I can feel it. It's like when your sheets are like not aligned and you fall asleep.
Yeah.
And you gotta like just like get up and line them up. My wife makes fun of me for that all the time. But yeah, no, the sheets, the tactile, everything has to be like squared off. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's definitely first world.
Was if you are what you eat, what are you?
A cheeseburger.
Yes. Best answer. Great answer.
Oh, I know it. I mean, I had a cheeseburger like 4 hours ago.
And you know, a cheeseburger, for all health concerns, might save your life one day. I learned that when I watched The Menu recently.
Oh, I need to see that movie, actually. You should see it. I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to.
Dude, you're in for a thrill ride of your life.
I'm looking forward to it.
What childish thing do you still enjoy doing as a grown-ass man?
I mean, video games, Legos, eating cheeseburgers. That's like all that fills my time.
That's so crazy. Like the idea to me of like a perfect, this is, sounds nuts, but like the idea of going to McDonald's and getting a bag full of cheeseburgers and eating them in my car.
Yeah, totally. Before you get home.
Is that not like the... Yeah, exactly. Shame eating.
I mean, now that I'm old enough, I can feel like a half a cheeseburger in my mouth.
Of course, yeah. At least. Oh, boy. And finally, this is like a little bit of a deep question, and I'm always curious for the answer. If you could erase from your memory the experience of playing one particular video game and play it again as if for the first time, which game would that be?
That is a really interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it depends. Like, I remember really loving Metal Gear Solid 2 when I played it as a kid. And I played it a bunch. I played it hard mode, and I like did all the things, like all the tags.
Get them dog tags.
And like that was a great time. But I don't want to like necessarily do that again. But also, like the ending to Inside was so insane that like I was almost crying laughing.
Yeah. Those are two good choices, though.
Yeah. And I also like the first time I played Elden Ring, the way that they present those bosses, like each boss has something so crazy and stupid that it was insane. Like the guy, he like cuts off his arm and then like sticks it inside of a dragon.
And dragon.
He's got a dragon head, man. That was crazy. I don't know. There's like so many things. I guess like if I were just going to race, like play a game for the first time again, for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Maybe actually, okay. When I played Eco when I was a kid,
Eco's
the game that precluded Shadow of the Colossus.
Uh-huh.
It starts with the opening scene is this big castle, and the camera's kind of like just going around the castle and it's in a valley and stuff. It blew my mind as a kid when I realized that castle, like every part of it, was something you were going to explore. And I didn't realize that until I had like finished most of the game. And so it completely recontextualized that opening scene because it wasn't just art. It was like, this is the whole game. And at the time that was like massive and cool. And that like feeling of being in an immense world is hard to replicate. So maybe that would actually be the answer, but I'm not sure.
I think we just found one of your weird and wild bonus weapons, just a blunt 2x4. That demolishes every like one hits every enemy in the game.
Yeah, he goes wild.
One shot wooden blank. Man, we need more games like that. I remember this is like a when I saw The Last Guardian for the very first time at E3 when they first showed it off.
Yeah.
I don't cry in public much, Waz. But there was something about that game that it made me miss my dog while I was watching it.
Oh no, yeah, totally.
And it's just the soundtrack and the visuals, and it's just so I think any of those games like Shadow of the Colossus or Last Guardian is just magical stuff. All right.
Yeah.
I don't want to cry in the podcast. I'm getting emotional. All right. With that, thank you so much, man. This has been very delightful.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So give us all the plugs. Where can we find you, the game?
Sure, yeah.
All that fun stuff.
So you can follow Yacht Club everywhere. It's always the same. Yacht Club Games, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all the places. And you can also join our Discord. You can get that through our Twitter. And then as far as me, I'm Nikwaz or Norkwaz, N-O-R-K-W-O-Z on Twitter. On Twitch, I stream most nights and I stream pixel art, and come watch and hackle me as I do pixel art for things that are not related to Yacht Club Games or totally amazing independent projects. And I even draw sprites for my subs. They become little characters in my stream. So
that's fun. So neat.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I'll pay $1,000 for that.
You could if you wanted, or you could just sub. It's up just... to you.
I don't know. I'll associate giving you $1,000 to do something for me. It's like, you can draw a little.
That's a good attitude. Go for it. That's that's awesome. That's a good life lesson to learn.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this week, man. It's been a lot of fun. The game looks incredible. Yeah. It cannot get here soon enough, but take your time.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there's love and trust. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Waz. Thank you, listeners. And as always, please be excellent to each other, or else you get a foot with a big old callus in the face. That should be a boss, by the way. Just saying.
The calloused foot.
Yes, just saying. All right, guys, until next time, I love you and goodbye.